Welcome into Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike, thanks for hanging out with us on a Thursday evening. If you want to be a part of the conversation here tonight until 10 p.m., you can text us. 98973 is the State Roofing text line. Frank Shires is here, and you're right, Frank. I'm, let's say, not the biggest fan of humidity.
Yes.
But, you know, you got to roll with the punches.
Tomorrow will not be as humid. You're going to have more sun than you're going to have clouds.
Well, that's good. And then the weekend comes.
Oh, we've got a treat for you planned for this weekend.
I can't wait. DB is here, of course. David Burbank on the ones and twos. We got a fun show tonight. I'm excited about this. We've got the staples, right? Rachel Bell, she's coming up at 7:30. She has a story about, it's basically, the article is so great. It's about a couple who their eating habits, now that they are home all the time and eat all their meals together, their eating habits are really starting to chip away at their patience for each other. It's just the funniest story. Can't wait to talk about it. And then Stacey Joe is going to come in at 8:30. And you heard in the top of the hour here, the news that the Boston Marathon is going to be done virtually. We're going to talk about that with Stacy. And then, but wait, there's more. Co-founder of GeekWire, his name's John Cook.
Yay.
He's going to talk to us. He wrote an article today that asked the question, should Amazon buy the Cinerama? And we're going to talk about that.
That's right.
And John's a great guy. Eagle-eared listeners of the show will remember him from basically when I'm out. I think I was out for a week or so.
It was when you were doing your cruise.
I was on the cruise. You were on January.
The cruise of sickness.
Oh, boy. I did get sick.
Yes, you did.
I did get sick on that boat. But John Cook's here. He's a great guy. Can't wait to talk to him. Checking in. We feeling good, guys?
Yep.
We're on this Friday Eve. Everyone doing okay? DB?
It is Friday.
Nodding his head. Hitting the bell.
Yep.
I like that. Let's get to the news, folks. Shall we? Let's.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
Well, as June 1st draws ever nearer, counties across Washington are looking to Governor Inslee to allow them to reopen businesses as unemployment rates have just soared in the last 2 months. Here's Q13 Fox's Hannah Kim with more details.
King County's unemployment rate is just under 15%. Most surrounding counties across western Washington are faring worse, with Snohomish County reaching the highest unemployment rate in the state in April.
The unemployment rate in Snohomish County is causing business owners to panic, looking for some sign that they can reopen and start making money again. Small businesses throughout the Snohomish area are hopeful that they will receive one of the county's grants, hoping to help their shops stay afloat. Here with more is Kayla Lafferty of King 5 TV.
The county is using a portion of the $37 million in resources from the CARES Act to provide grants to struggling small businesses. Those businesses will receive grants of up to $25,000.
Lafferty spoke with Matthias Winters, who runs a tattoo shop in Monroe, who has applied for the county's grant, and he is anxious about his application.
It stresses me out, man. I got a whole other month to wait to get see if I even get the grant.
The virus has been particularly tough on businesses like tattoo parlors. And many restaurants in Snohomish County have had to lay off or furlough workers as well. However, there is some hope for restaurants like Cask and Trotter over in Linwood. The owner there, Robert Carson, spoke to Q13 Fox about the changes he's made to Cask and Trotter.
Now we're doing full-on family meals, and that's been the most popular. We've actually created a new customer base with these online platforms.
It's a smart idea, and luckily for him, he's already been able to rehire some of his staff who had been initially laid off.
At this point, we've brought back anybody that wasn't eligible for unemployment, and they're back on the payroll.
While Carson has made necessary changes to keep his restaurant afloat, he's still looking forward to when Snohomish County can proceed to phase two of the governor's reopening plan. Under phase two, restaurants will be allowed to let people dine in, though the dining rooms will only be able to hold 50% of their usual capacity. And to get to phase two, counties need to have fewer than 10 cases of the virus per 100,000 people over a two-week, 14-day span, among some other requirements. And according to Snohomish County Executive Dave Summers, who was on the Dory Monson show earlier today, the county already meets four out of the five requirements set out by the state.
We can check all the boxes that the state has laid out in terms of having PPE both on hand and in the pipeline, testing gear, testing capacity, contact tracing, a quarantine facility site. We have hospital capacity. So we check all those boxes.
But the one box that it doesn't check is infection rates. Summers claimed that Snohomish County has had over 10 cases per 100,000 people in the last 2 weeks, though he argued that the rate is close enough to warrant the county's reopening.
Take out the long-term health care facilities, which CDC says is appropriate to do when you're looking at this type of data. And if you just look at the general population, we're within one or two a day of the state's numbers.
So let's talk about Snohomish County. Should they be allowed to move on to phase two, seeing as they have the highest rate of unemployment in Washington at over 20%?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I think that you got to meet the requirements. If you want to change the requirements, if you want to petition to change the requirements, I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. If you have strong feelings one way or another, then you communicate them to the governing officials and see if there's a little bit of wiggle room there. And if there is, then, yeah, this is a 20% unemployment is a drastic situation. So maybe you take a drastic measure here and there, as long as it doesn't put the population in general at a significant risk.
Yeah, I'm not too bothered by it. If, in fact, the numbers are true, that they are at that higher rate solely because of nursing homes,
right.
then that's a controlled environment.
Right.
I'm fine with them going to phase two. I think I don't know that when they thought about phase one, phase two, they had every detail thought out. And if a measurable percentage of your new cases or your cases are in a environment like that we know is the worst environment in most places in the state, if not in the country, it seems to me, and you can contain those, and I think most of the nursing homes have done a pretty good job of keeping it from spreading outside the nursing home at this particular point, I'm okay with them. And if the CDC is also okay with that,
yeah,
you know, then I'm okay with them moving along.
Yeah, I agree.
Number two.
Governor Jay Inslee spoke during a press conference today, giving an update on what the state is doing to help workers impacted by COVID-19. Inslee first gave some insight into how the state will protect workers in long-term care facilities. He announced that both staff and residents in the facilities around the state will have mandatory tests taken over the next month.
So under this order, all residents and staff in nursing homes will be tested within approximately 2 weeks. And all residents and staff in assisted living facilities with a memory care unit will be tested within about 4 weeks.
Washington Secretary of Health John Weissman explained how the test should help the state get an idea of how many people in the facilities are infected.
What I think this will do is give us a sense of just how much asymptomatic infection is present in our facilities.
He said that what they learn through testing will help determine when the next steps can be taken, such as allowing relatives to visit loved ones in the facilities. Governor Inslee also revealed new guidance in the state for protecting agricultural workers. According to Inslee, the proclamation will protect workers in all environments of agriculture.
This proclamation is going to protect workers in the fields, in packing houses for fruit and vegetables, and on employer-provided transportation.
One of the guidelines from the governor.
Amongst the many things we're doing to protect agricultural workers, we need workers in small cohorts, not more than 15 people together, that are protected from exposure to other people working.
And other requirements under the new order include cloth facial coverings must be worn by every employee not working alone on the job site. Employers, providers, and housing operators must ensure physical distancing of 6 feet or more during all interactions within scope of employment. Employers must ensure that high-touch surfaces are disinfected prior to the start of each workday and before and after the morning, lunch, and afternoon breaks. Employers, housing operators, and transportation providers must supply adequate hand-washing stations at every location and at all times that employees are acting within the scope of their employment. New guidelines are coming partially as a response to strikes and lawsuits from farm workers throughout the state demanding that they are better protected from the virus. Strikes in Yakima, one of the state's biggest agricultural cities, were recognized by Inslee.
Now, the striking workers in Yakima on the lines as we speak are clear in their calls that more needs to be done. We hear that message.
One of the most vivid examples of forgotten necessary workers were agricultural workers.
Yeah.
This was a group of people who were deemed necessary immediately. That meant that you actually, in some cases, could not go to work and file for unemployment. Because even though you could have been terrified at what you were going to run into out there, because they were necessary, because employers weren't always releasing them, to file for unemployment and may in fact contest that unemployment, you may not actually get it. And so in this particular case, it's nice to see them recognize what a lot of people, and in fact, a lot of journalists on the eastern part of the state recognized early on, is that this is a vulnerable group of people
right.
that we have deemed essential.
And they're folks who, you know, oftentimes, because of whatever their immigration status might be, that they are afraid to go seek medical treatment. You know, there's a lot of fear in the agricultural communities about that type of thing. And so this is good on that end. Also, this seems like stuff we should be doing anyway. I mean, I know it's far from what we're used to doing, but really, if you look at keeping people healthy and keeping people germ-free and keeping people able to go to work and process our food and not be sick, I think that these are all good moves.
Well, and also, I mean, we've seen this in the industries that produce the food that we buy in grocery stores. You sometimes do have to think, how did that thing get here? Upstream from the meat processing plants, which have had terrible problems mm-hmm. with coronavirus spreading, to the agricultural centers that also have had problems with virus spreading, because they tend to be workers you don't think about when you buy, you know, some boneless chicken breasts in the
right.
store. You don't think about that in the same way, nor when you're picking up a bag of, you know, oranges or avocados at the store as well. And it pays to actually worry about that end of the food chain additionally.
Number three.
The State Employment Security Department has been struggling over the last week after it was discovered that a Nigerian fraud ring called Scattered Canary has stolen hundreds of millions of dollars by falsely filing unemployment claims. Well, according to Susie Levine, the state has been able to recover roughly $300 million back from the fraud ring.
We have been able to recover $300 million, including $50 million that we are getting back today.
However, in the act of reclaiming these funds, over 300,000 Washington workers have had their very real unemployment claims delayed even further. So hopefully the state will have more time to process those claims now, as Levine reported a decline of roughly 68% in new unemployment claims this week. According to Levine, that drop is due to the new security measures put in place by the ESD this week to protect Washington State from further unemployment fraud. The ESD has not disclosed how they were able to recover the $300 million from Scattered Canary, nor, and this is the big question, how much the fraudsters were able to initially take from the state.
Yeah, I certainly do hope that there is a full accounting and a full auditing of this, because I don't know. You would assume that when specific states are targeted, it's because there's specific weaknesses in those states.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, and no one has told us otherwise, that it wasn't completely random that it was Washington. But my guess is that what you do if you're trying to steal from houses is you knock on a bunch of doors where you don't hear a response.
Right.
That's the house you pick.
Right.
You know, you have your backstory ready to go, and when you do hear someone, or you hear a dog, or you hear or you see an alarm sign, perhaps you don't go there. And it's just, I don't break into houses, you know, but I'm guessing that that's a pretty standard approach, having had a house that was broken into.
Mm.
But I gotta say, you go for what's easiest. You do not go for what's hard or the same as everything else.
That's right.
So it's conceivable that it's random, but something tells me that we're gonna find out there was something in the state structure in Washington, and it could have been well-intentioned, like getting out the money fast. But something in the state structure of Washington made us a particularly juicy piece of fruit on the tree.
Yeah, I think it might also have to do, this is pure speculation, with the fact that we were first, right? That if we were the first state in the United States to report a case, then that sort of accelerated our timeline, and we were one of the first places to shut down. I know California enacted some stay-at-home measures prior to us, but if I'm outside looking in, I'm seeing us as one of the first places that people are going to en masse be filing for unemployment. Maybe that's just a faster developing pool that's easier to take advantage of more quickly.
Conceivably, but if you look at the timing of when they believe the fraud actually started happening, it seems like many other states at that time were doing the same thing. Because remember, this really started in a big way once the feds had allocated a lot of that money to the state
right.
to disperse that money. So
right.
while that could be true, I suspect that it was something a little bit different than that.
I wonder how many of these types of stories happen that we don't know about. Maybe they're not on this grand of a scale, but I'm curious to know, maybe we can talk to somebody at some point, but how common, how prevalent is this idea of a foreign group, organization, and they are organized. How often do they try and attack our vulnerabilities and take advantage?
All the time. If you talk to security experts, all the time. And in fact, some do are successful, and we don't hear about those. And if you want to hear more about those, well, then support your local newspaper. Yeah, or support your local, website, because frequently the states won't tell you about that. But they will after someone has sometimes... People, I don't think, don't understand. Sometimes when the state is talking about it, has a press conference, I'm not saying that is true here, but when the state has a press conference about, we just discovered that such and such broke in, stole a bunch of money, you know, through hacking or whatever, sometimes those are results of the state actually just discovering it. And sometimes it's because some intrepid journalist out there filed a Freedom of Information Act request, got a bunch of documentation. The people giving out that information, they know what's going to happen. They know a big story is going to come out that the state hasn't told you about this data breach.
Right.
And so they jump out to get in front of the news. And so that also, so I would argue, we're less likely to know about these things with the decline of the journalism industry.
Can I tell you something? Before I got here, I've been working at Cairo for, I don't know, 4+ years at this point. And I did not understand the necessity that of local newspaper journalism. I thought sort of, oh, newspapers, it's old school. We do newer media now. But really, as far as an ecosystem is concerned, it's like plankton in the ocean. Like it's at the bottom that feeds everything else up the food chain. And I just, if for anyone out there who, you know, who doesn't know that or may not be familiar with that idea, it really, really is crucial.
You don't have to disregard your local news producers if you're angry at CNN or if you're angry at Fox News.
Right.
You really should still, because the folks who are working at Crosscut, the folks who are working at the Seattle Times and any number of KNKX, any number of places, are doing really exceptional work. And they're the type of people who get on top of these problems. And hopefully that $300 million was most of it. And hopefully we don't need to find out that it was just a third of it.
Yeah. We got a heads up. If you're expecting a stimulus check, and by check I mean these debit cards they're sending out, you're definitely going to want to listen at 7:45. There's a big something to look out for. But before that, Rachel Bell, she's got a great, great story. Stay tuned, everybody. Cairo Nights. Thursday, it's time to talk to our favorite golden gal with the prayer hands up by her face. It's Rachel Bell.
I'm a human emoji.
Hi, Rach.
Hi.
How are you?
I am good. Yeah. I don't know. I ate too much. I'm lethargic, to tell you the truth.
It's that office lunch?
It's that office lunch, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, like, working in an environment with a lot of beige walls, like, I just get tired in here. We need pizzazz.
And fluorescent lighting, you think?
Yeah,
we do need pizzazz.
I want it to look like Miami Vice in there. I want like like tones of salmon and cream pants.
Get that like tropical wall like in Scarface in that back office where it just looks like Miami.
I want a watermelon color scheme. I think it would help.
Ooh.
Plants.
It might. There's science behind
that. Let me redesign.
I'm going to put your name in. There's science behind wall color and how it makes you feel and all that good stuff. I have a feeling that's not what we're talking about today.
No, I was just going to say we're not talking about that. All right, because we can only talk about the coronavirus, not interior decorating. So there was this story in the New York Times I love the gray lady, but sometimes they have these like trend pieces and then you read through and you're like, oh, they found one great subject and they were like, we got to figure out how to make an article about them. And that's the case with this article. The headline is couples who eat together may not stay together. I think there has been this message that has been pushed a lot over the past 10 years about what a special thing it is to gather around the table and how it brings people together. And if you don't eat dinner with your family or your children, they'll grow up to be drug addicts and murderers. But this article is not that. It's saying everybody's at home. working from home. And so these families who are always so busy and running around are actually eating dinner together for the first time every single night, sometimes lunch and breakfast too, so three meals a day. And the things that always bugged you a little bit about your partner are now bugging you a lot. So they talked about this one couple in particular, Marianne Andrews and Jonathan Miller. They have two teenagers. They live just outside of London, and they've been together for 20 years. Some after 20 years, she still can't let it go that he slurps his coffee in the morning. She says, Jonathan's eating habits have irritated me for years anyway and have only been exasperated during the last 6 or 7 weeks of him working from home. The coffee is too hot to sip, so it gets sucked up, not gulping, more of a sucking sound. Apparently, he's also waiting for a molar implant, and because of that, he is forced to chew his food in a lopsided fashion, which has, quote, as the New York Times says, terrorized his wife. Let's see what else. When he cooks, quote, he demands much praise and gets very huffy if anyone diplomatically says they prefer another dish to the one he has made that night. And my favorite, he eats Snickers bars slice by slice with a knife and manages to make the one candy bar last about a week, which I think is endearing and funny.
I mean, I'm a slow eater and I'm not a big candy guy, but I couldn't make a candy bar last a week. No. And who eats it with a fork and knife?
I love it.
Wasn't that an entire bit on Seinfeld?
Yes.
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 Yes. And everybody started doing it
exactly.
When they saw. Yes.
So that's
right.
Who. It's this is not new.
Well, I'm reading this and I'm saying I don't think that she is annoyed with him. I think she has misophonia, which is, you know, like an actual medical condition. Yeah, where you hate the sounds, like in general, different sounds, but it usually comes back to people chewing. Mm-hmm. And you can hear it more than other people can. My mouth is closed. I'm chewing with my mouth closed, but you can hear it and you hate it and it bothers you.
You know the most famous person with that, right?
Who?
Drives her around the bend?
Mm.
Katie Couric.
Oh,
really?
She has misophonia?
Yes. And she cannot. It drives her, like, she gets incredibly angry when people eat around her and she can hear it. Like, it has this, she admits it, a total emotional effect,
yeah,
just below rage.
I relate to this. It is all the alarm bells go off. You can't hear anything else. I can't eat by myself if they're in silence. Like, just the noises in my head drive me crazy. I probably have this.
Do they drown out the voices?
No, voices are real loud.
The voices are yelling at the noises?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Shut up, you! Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets mad. I like this story for a couple of
reasons. Oh, yeah, she also hates when he eats nuts.
The bowls of pistachios.
Yeah, the pistachios, and she makes it sound like he's doing it on purpose to bother her.
He's a monster, though.
Yeah.
He doesn't just crack them open and chew them. He, like, sucks the pistachio out of the shell. I'm on her side. 100%.
I wonder how many people make it this far, because you could go out with someone a few times and not like the way they eat, and that could be a deal breaker from the beginning.
It actually did with a friend of mine who went on a date with someone who he ate her food like a pack dog. And he
what
couldn't,
does that mean?
That means just like tearing at it, just like nothing else in the world existed, like someone was gonna yank that plate any second now. And he said he thought it was going to be like a conversation. He said she was lovely and fun to hang out with, but he said he realized very quickly, like, at every meal, this was what was going to happen, and it was eventually going to wear him out.
I want listeners to message us and let us know if your spouse, if your partner does something that you find completely disgusting in the culinary world, how they eat. 989-738, text us. And tell us how gross they are.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any of these issues with your partners? I mean, the thing that struck me about this article was, like, it is kind of like you've been together 20 years and you haven't been eating dinner together that much for 20 years. Like, this is new.
Yeah. I'll go out in front. I'll take the first.
Oh, okay.
The first arrows. Yeah. I'm somebody who I'm an intense introvert, right? And
you
so
are?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And I know I don't read that way, but I am that way. And I just I was given this, like, personality software on top of my very introvert hardware. So I run this personality program so people misread. But I need, like, time alone with nobody around. And that's not a thing anymore. I don't even have a commute. I live so close to work. It's like a 5-10 minute walk. I've noticed, and I haven't taken any action on it, because I know it's my fault. But I've noticed little tiny things are starting to build up, and I start to get those alarm bells going off and have to, like, take a minute and and go like, no, stop. You're being unnecessary right now. But yeah, it hasn't been chewing necessarily, but there are things that are starting to
eating
kind of get
or other
to me.
Things. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I have other things too, but not eating things.
No.
I had a friend though, like a really, 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 really good friend where I confronted her because she chewed with her mouth open and just like, blah, blah, blah. It just was the grossest sound. And I asked her, like, I thought we were good enough friends that I could say something.
Uh-oh.
And I tried to say it in a funny way. And she just said, no, I'm not going to stop eating the way I eat because you want me to. She said, my parents didn't teach me manners surrounding eating. And so this is the way that I eat and deal with it.
What?
And I was so surprised that was her reaction, was like, no, this is me. Like, it was a part of her personality.
That's her identity.
Part
of me, though, is kind of impressed.
Me too.
Because that's an unusual response. Most people either apologize and say they won't and then they do, or they try not to.
And
then they get super embarrassed. And they get very, very... like, you've usually wounded them permanently with something like that
right.
in some manner. It's like selling someone that they have bad breath,
right?
I mean, they immediately, like, cower and worry about fixing themselves. The fact that it's like, you know, screw you, deal with it, I think it's actually weirdly refreshing. Are you still friends, though?
No.
Exactly.
Not because of that, but because that was basically your whole outlook on everything was just like, this is me, deal with it. And you're like, I don't want to anymore.
Yeah. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little flex goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Any podcast news, Rach?
Oh, always. My podcast, Your Last Meal, has a wonderful and beautiful array of celebrities. Coming up next week, Valerie Bertinelli.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Just lost out on an interview with Ralph Nader. If I say this, maybe it'll get back to him and it'll be like, you know what? I want to be on that show. Danny Trejo, who has been the bad guy
yes.
in so many movies. There was an article that came out in February that says Danny Trejo has been killed on screen more than any other actor. 65 deaths. I chat with him.
He also gets killed when he's a good guy. He gets killed. Yeah,
yeah
just
see?
Gets killed
yep.
on film. Yeah,
yeah, he's amazing. So he talks about the funniest, weirdest way he is killed, and also, of course, his last meal.
That is, of course, Your Last Meal. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. YourLastMeal.com. Thank you, Rachel Bale.
Thank you.
We'll be back, everybody. More Cairo Nights after this. Love this song. Love when you play this bump, DB. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike. Got a lot of stuff coming up on the show. We're going to talk about evictions and some financial hardship at 8 o'clock. We're also going to talk about tent encampments. I got to be honest with you. I'll probably say this at 8 o'clock, too. I have a difficult time talking about this stuff. It's just homelessness is just such a complicated issue and so much to it, but we're going to tackle it. Mike Lewis is probably going to speak some rational truth to the situation.
If I can find some.
but first, a little heads up. If you're one of the millions of people who are expecting their federal relief, there are folks who, you know, I got mine pretty soon, that economic stimulus check, that $1,200, got mine pretty soon because the IRS had my direct deposit info, so they just send it right there, no problem. But for a couple million people, the IRS does not have that information. And so instead of sending out checks, mailing out paper checks like is standard, they have decided to go the route of the debit card. And the problem here is that that they are sending these things in plain old white envelopes. The return address says Money Network Cardholder Services, and it doesn't have any markings that indicates it's from the federal government. So there is a risk here, and this has already happened to folks, that it looks like another junk credit card email mail solicitation that I don't know about you, but comprises probably more than half of the mail I get these days. And heads up, everybody. This is a serious thing because if you're a family of four, you're talking about $3,400 that you might just toss in the trash because there's no indication on this thing that it's relief from the federal government. It's bizarre.
Yeah, the especially the name Money Network Cardholder Services is exactly the type of thing you'd toss right away.
Yeah.
And there's one easy way around. There's two easy ways around this. One, if they are doing that to mask, you know, the way credit card companies, when they send you a new credit card, they put a very few markings on the envelope, which mm-hmm. immediately identifies it as a new credit card. All they had to do, the feds had to do, the Treasury Department, was send a letter 2 days in advance, just a single letter saying you are going to be getting this in the mail. Look for this return address.
Right.
And then that way people will know and then they'll grab it. But when something arrives like that, you can see why people who get inundated with junk mail would not necessarily, especially something from, again, what is it? What is it again?
Money Network Cardholder Services.
Money Network Cardholder Services. It makes complete sense that people would bypass it. It's a shame that some people, I mean, I tend to check things pretty closely, and hopefully that when you do open this up, I haven't received one, but if you do open this up, you would get something that would require you to call in with a SSI or something, a PIN
yeah.
that would allow you access to this money, which then means, well, then why not just label it from the federal
yeah.
government
which
so
you
know
do,
what
yeah.
it is, because then you will, when you see that stamp, you open it at 100% of the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you don't toss mail from the IRS. That's a recipe for bad news. No, but it gets worse. Let's say you do open it up and you're like, let me see what this is all about. The IRS, they had to set up an FAQ on the website because people were having issues and questions about this. And in it, they say, oh, well, here's how you can tell. It's a Visa. It has the Visa logo, and it's issued by Meta Bank. Hey, IRS, that doesn't help me. That still sounds like fakery.
Yeah,
like a solicitation.
But even something from MetaBank, if at least the guiding language in the letter, yeah, maybe. As long as there's something that identifies it as something legit. But if it looks like, because there's a couple of things you receive. Generally, you don't just get a credit card in the mail. You get some fake credit card thing mm-hmm. that looks like a credit card and says you are eligible for this credit card, fill out the application or do whatever. Every now and then you'll just get an unsolicited credit card, although that doesn't happen as much as it used to. But even if it comes looking like that and it's Meta Bank, some bank you haven't heard of,
right.
from Cardholder Services, you know, you're probably not inclined, unless the language says, hey, this is your stimulus money. It's an odd turn, especially for a federal government that insisted on having the president's own signature
yep.
on the check.
Yep.
Because that was also pretty unprecedented. So they went from demanding full credit for one person to no one getting credit and thus things getting tossed away. I would, frankly, have been happier with the president's signature on this and it actually making it like, if he wants credit, fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. As long as people know what it is when it gets in the mail, yeah, cool, whatever. Take the credit. You're the guy in the chair. That's fine with me. But this particular case seems a little odd.
Well, how hard is it to put IRS in the return address or Department of Treasury?
Department of Treasury, right, yeah.
It's not that difficult. Money Network Cardholder Services. Oh, don't worry. The letter says it's an economic impact payment card. I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before.
Hopefully, there's also a way, or maybe on, and I'll take a look for this and let you know later in the show, that there is some way to reapply and get that. You know, that you can actually that card canceled and
yeah,
then reapply.
Because
that would, at least for those of you who may be worried you threw it away, there should be an access point for you to reapply.
Yeah, and you didn't activate it. You do have to call a number and give them PIN and do all that stuff like normal. So mail theft isn't really an issue. It's insane. More Chiron Knights right after this. Stay tuned.